7:32. So a recent UN report reveals that North Korea is finding new ways to evade international sanctions as it remains uncertain whether Pyongyang will earn relief through a denuclearization deal with the US. Pounder sharp 1013 for 51 per message. If you'd like to have your say, can we break the impasse by offering some relief, or are we simply falling into North Korea's trap by even contemplating that? Professor William Brown from the School of Foreign Service at Georgetown University joins us on the line. He's also a retired US government economist who served in the CIA. Thank you so much for taking the time.
No, I appreciate the chance to talk to you.
Mm-hmm. Now, in the wake of the apparently failed Hanoi summit last month, we have seen a lot of talk from all sides on how we should proceed. It still looks rather like a deadlock. Yeah. And in fact, North Korea has ramped up some of the rhetoric, threatening to return to missile and nuclear testing, suggesting that South Korea is not really doing much of a mediating role. How do you view the situation?
Yeah, probably not as negative as a lot of people. I wouldn't call the Hanoi summit a failure. I mean, it didn't succeed, that's for sure. But at least they walked away kind of in good spirits, you might put it that way, and have not closed the door for further talks. The two sides clearly were asking for very big things. That's the other thing, that probably we should not expect, you know, breakthroughs. By their nature, a breakthrough happens very rarely. So a little patience, I think, is called for here.
Yeah, and of course, the thing about dialogue, most people seem to agree that it's worth trying, and it's not like they have lifted sanctions or suspended them while dialogue's ongoing. How effective would you say that pressure policy's been?
Well, you know, I thought for many years I watched the sanctions and thought they were not very effective. Obviously, they didn't stop anything in North Korea. But the everything changed, I think, in mid-2017, a year and a half ago, when President Xi came to America, came to Florida, and met with Trump, and they had a kind of a knockdown battle over trade issues, you know, that are still happening. But it seemed to me at the time North Korea came up at the in the meetings, and the two leaders came to grips with an idea of really putting pressure on North Korea. And so since that point, the Chinese have really, I think, stepped to the plate with their side of the sanctions that have changed the nature of the game quite a lot. So some people say Trump's maximum pressure. I would say no, really it's the UN maximum pressure really came in 2017. And then in addition, of course, President Trump had his sort of military temper tantrums. Mm. You know, the little button and the big button and all that. In a lot of ways, that was called for. After all, North Korea did a hydrogen bomb test, you know, huge bomb test, and was playing around with ICBM. So I think it was quite logical, necessary for the U.S. to push back hard on that. That was all in 2017, and very quickly after the Chinese stopped trade, importing from North Korea, lo and behold, here comes Kim. He travels to Beijing three times. He travels to Panmunjom, and he even meets with President Trump two times. So, you know, there's been a lot of activity since that maximum pressure campaign started, and I think it's sort of paying off. Slowly, and it's certainly not finished yet. I mean, the progress is not finished yet. But I think we're in a much better shape today than we were, say, a year and a half ago.
But is there a danger that it's actually weakening global resolve here? Because it's been something of a charm offensive from Chairman Kim Jong-un's point of view. He's had the opportunity to have high-profile meetings in places like Singapore and Vietnam that he otherwise probably would not have had. And of course, the trade war with China has opened the door for, apparently, a few gaps in the sanctions regime.
Yes, mm-hmm, yeah.
Does that concern
I'm
you?
Thinking, and I've read, you mentioned the panel of experts report. I've just read it last week. A new one came out. And they're picking, you know, it's a great report. They go through a lot of details of of sort of criminal activity, people breaking the rules on the sanctions. When you add it all together, though, to me it doesn't add up to anything close to the shutdown in trade that the official Chinese government, other governments have done. So I think we need to pay attention to the bigger picture here, where China has, in 2018, for example, their imports from North Korea's sales to China fell 88%. Can you imagine that? Almost to nothing. So I'm thinking it's pretty clear to me that that's having big implications for the North Korean economy. And that's actually what we saw in the Hanoi summit. We saw Kim, I wouldn't say desperate, but really demanding, really wanting a reduction in the sanctions. So that's kind of telling us that they're important to North Korea. And, you know, he takes that long train ride back to Pyongyang. I'm sure for 3 days or whatever, he's thinking, oh, my goodness, I traveled all. In fact, one of his advisors said as much. You know, I've traveled all this way, and what did I get from it? Nothing, really.
Yeah.
So he has to go back to Pyongyang and tell his people, and people already know it, that the sanctions are still on, and the economy's in trouble. So I think the pressure is still there. It's not maximum pressure, for sure. There's no military pressure. And we're acting cordially. Both sides are acting very cordially for a change. That's a big change. But I think, yes, I think the pressure is still there on Kim. So I'm hopeful that he'll come to grips with his own situation and start realizing he's got to get back to the negotiating table.
I wanted to ask you about the military side, though, just briefly, because we have seen the allies here suspend indefinitely, pretty much, some of the major military drills on this peninsula. And for what in return? Has it been worth it? And even then, North Korea, for example, there was a report yesterday, North Korea complaining about South Korean military drills, even despite the suspension of the mass
drills. Never ending. Yeah, right. Yeah, no matter what you do, they'll ask for more. That's a given. We're kind of used to North Korea on that score. And we have given up some exercises. Remember, these were huge, much bigger exercises 10, 20 years ago. They've already been dubbed down quite a lot, and now we've dumbed them down even further. Frankly, though, I'm not a military expert, but I've listened to the military, our military for years and years, and they love to exercise. That's what they do. I'm thinking, though, in the Korean context, the whole nature of a potential war has changed at this point. If they have they have nuclear weapons, we're not going to have a normal kind of conventional war with them. It would be much more of a Iraq kind of war where it happens very fast. So I'm not disregarding the need for exercises, but to me they're not as big a deal as they used to be. More important is for us to be ready for attack. The exercises are always very defensive. We've made a big pitch out of that. I think actually in a nuclear war context, we have to be more ready for offense, you know, to take out missiles before they're shot. And that requires a much different kind of preparation that really doesn't mean tanks running around the fields like they used to. So, we've given up a little bit there, no doubt. What have the North Koreans given up? Well, not much. Two real important things I want to point out. They're not testing their ICBM. You know, remember Trump said no ICBM a year and a half ago. And sure enough, they have not tested an ICBM. They really do need to test it because they haven't shown that they can bring down a warhead through the atmosphere. You know, that missile goes 20,000 miles high. It comes crashing down to Earth at a very high speed, and it's very hard to bring it down intact. They haven't shown that they can do that. They need to show that if they really want to say they have it determined. So not doing that missile test is very important. The second thing that is lost on a lot of people, and I think this may be even more important, you know, ever since the Korean War, there's been this huge North Korean propaganda campaign against the U.S. especially in the month of, I think, June and July, Korean War Month, they call it, where they have all these posters in the U.S., anti-U.S. posters. This last year, they didn't do that. And the propaganda line in North Korea has become not positive to America, but all that negative talk is gone. And everybody is noticing, what's happening to our big enemy? This, you know, we might laugh at the propaganda. It's kind of comical, a lot of it. But for their system, propaganda is hugely important for galvanizing the support of the people. So if they're not screaming bloody murder at the U.S. in their Norong Shinmun, that's a change. It's an important change. It sort of will hopefully lead to better conversations in the future with them.
So there are reasons for hope. But again, just pushing the other side of this, we've got the propaganda outlet, Urimin Jokiri, which said yesterday that South Korea's plans to hold any sort of drills that we were referring to before is a vicious challenge. We saw last week the Vice Foreign Minister, Choi Sun-hee, talking about how missile tests and nuclear tests may be resumed if the U.S. doesn't basically do more from its side. It's not perhaps likely, although Mike Pompeo, U.S. Secretary of State, has talked about sequencing, giving perhaps some hope that there will be some steps rather than the all-or-nothing approach that we've seen reported that the U.S. is after.
But when we
put that in combination, I can't help thinking that North Korea's moving the goalposts, that not only is it moving the goalposts on drills, it's moving the goalposts on sanctions, it's redefining what it wants from the allies.
Yes, right. Mm-hmm.
How do you proceed if you're President Trump or any leader right now with that concern?
Yeah, I think the key is you got to expect North Korea to do that. They haven't, in my mind, I think everybody kind of asks the wrong question. They say, is North Korea going to give up their nukes? Of course not. Nobody gives up a nuclear weapon. The trick for our side is to make them understand that having nukes is killing their system. It's killing their economy. It's killing their socialism. I've watched them develop nukes for 20 years, 30 years even, 1984. And as their nukes have developed, their economy, their socialist economy, has imploded. It's in no much worse shape than when they started the nukes. And it's continuing in that direction. So we can't decide that for them. But I think this pressure campaign, not the maximum pressure, but the economic pressure, with the understanding that maximum pressure can come back in an instant if they do missile tests, or certainly a nuclear test. And next time, the maximum pressure will probably be a lot more political as well, you know, much more dangerous to the regime. And it would include even more actions by China. So I think we've actually got them kind of in a box. We should understand that they have a really tough difficulty, really tough problem in opening up to the outside world. Trump administration maybe has offered things that a lot of North Koreans would be very afraid of, you know. Most of them would be very afraid of Samsung coming into their country or of trains crossing with rich South Korean tourists going to China. A lot of people won't like that. So a lot of what we've been offering are, I think, a little bit off kilter. I would say our side has to change the mix a little bit and offer some things that are not scary to North Korea. Don't feed the state. Don't help out the state, but make them a little bit more comfortable with the idea of reform in North Korea. Reforms that can make it safe for them not to have nuclear weapons.
Professor Brown.
So it's kind of a it's a matter of persuasion, but no doubt it's a very difficult problem, and we're certainly not there yet.
Right. Professor Brown, thank you for joining us today.
Okay, I hope it's helpful. Mm-hmm.
Professor William Brown, speaking to us from Georgetown University, formerly of the CIA. At 7:47, let's now cross to our news bite with Shinyena.